In a world full of lies and deception, it takes courage to speak truth. In a nation half-bent on its own destruction, it takes honor to seek a return to glory. Join us in cutting through the lies and propaganda. It's time for Cutting Through the Chaos on the America Out Loud Network. Here is your host, Wallace Garneau.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cutting Through the Chaos on the America Out Loud Network, where we cut through the lies and the propaganda to bring you the out loud truth. I'm your host, Wallace Garneau, and I think I've got a great show for you today. I tried to cut a show the last couple of weeks. I was actually in Cabo St. Lucas, Mexico, and I did do a show. Unfortunately, apparently it didn't transmit very well. One of the things I didn't realize in going to Mexico, and I want to talk about third world countries, not just third world countries, I want to talk about foreign countries that I have been to, the differences in politics, the differences in economics, the differences in lifestyles, and things like that. I do want to talk a little about the election, but I want to move away from that a bit and kind of talk about a larger subject, which is kind of what the rest of the world looks like. And having been in Mexico for the last couple of weeks, Mexico is very, very deeply on my mind. You have kind of two views of Mexico as a tourist. You have the view of Mexico where the tourists are, and then you have the view of Mexico where the tourists are not. My wife and I have a timeshare in Cabo St. Lucas, so we try to go once every year or two. We were there 2 weeks this year because we were not there the year before, and we had a lot of points to use. I don't want to get into why we have a timeshare. That's a long story. Suffice it to say we had a timeshare in Hollywood Beach, Florida, that my wife had before I married her. And it was on the second week of July. And I don't know if you've ever been to Hollywood Beach, Florida in the second week of July. I know Ron DeSantis is a great governor. Those who have been listening to me for some time, reading my weekly column, they know I'm a Ron DeSantis fan. So great guy, great state. But Hollywood Beach, second week of July, probably not someplace you're going to want to travel. It's like 100 degrees every day, 100% humidity. If there's a breeze coming in off the ocean, it's not so bad. But if that breeze dies, you just can't leave your hotel room. It's terrible. So we didn't use that much, and we had an opportunity to trade it for a better one. So now we have a timeshare in Cabo St. Lucas. If you use it, it's really not that bad of a deal. If you don't use it, obviously, that's why people hate timeshares. So we try to use it. But going to Cabo St. Lucas, every year or every 2 years, we start to see more of Mexico than maybe the typical tourist. We were there during the spring break time, so there were a bunch of college kids there. I'll get into some of the good news, by the way, about those college kids a little bit later. But they don't really see Mexico. They see the first Mexico I talked about, which is the tourist area. And the only thing negative I have to say about the tourist area around Cabo St. Lucas, the resort that we were in, the area around the marina where all the tourists go, some of the beaches where the locals go, where tourists also go. You know, we had a great time in those areas. Are absolutely amazing. The food's outstanding. Prices are kind of high, but you know, you take what you get, I guess. But that's because the tourists are there and they know that they can charge tourist rates. If you go where the tourists are not, the prices come way down. But you also start to see the underbelly of Mexico and the promise of what America could become with the wrong kind of governance. And this is where I'm going to get into politics, our politics, just for a moment, because you know, I don't think the American people really appreciate exactly what is happening in this upcoming election. Now, we have career bureaucrats, whether they're DAs, whether they're whatever they are, bureaucrats all over the government. What they're trying to do is they're trying to say, okay, you, the American people, maybe you want to elect the great orange one to be your president again. But we weren't hip to it in 2016. We didn't do enough to prevent it from happening. Now we're going to stop this. We are not going to allow you to choose the person you want to be president of the United States. We're going to make sure he wins the primary so that we choose who he runs against. But then we're going to do what we can to quash the election. We'll throw him in jail on some bad charges if we have to. We will try to take him off the ballot in different states. We will use the bureaucratic state to decide who is allowed to be the president of the United States. And we will not allow the will of the people to choose the president of the United States. That's what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. And if you doubt that's what's happening, all you have to do is look at the fact that a judge in New York valued the Mar-a-Lago estate at $18 million. Now, in a fire sale, there is not a realtor in Florida that would list it under $300 million. And realtors will say, yeah, it could be worth $1 billion, which is what Donald Trump listed it as. And, you know, the whole process of negotiating in real estate is I tell you what I think my property is worth. You tell me what you think my property is worth. And then we negotiate. That's true if I'm selling the property. That's true if I'm using as collateral on a loan. That's true if I'm taking out an insurance policy. I have my valuation, which is going to be in my best interest. It's going to be on the high side of what is legitimate. You're going to have your valuation. It's going to be on the low side of what's legitimate because you want to protect your interests. And then we negotiate. That's how it's done. That's what Trump did. And we know that the case against him in New York was absolutely, excuse me for saying this, it was bullshit. And we know that because $18 million is so far below any legitimate valuation. The court literally stuck their finger up at the American people with the valuation that they gave. And essentially what they said is, we're not even going to have the pretense that this is a legitimate court case. And so they're taking hundreds of millions of dollars away from Trump. They're trying to hit him where it hurts, which is in the pocketbook. And that's what they're doing. The case in Georgia is absolutely insane. He did not spark an insurrection. As a matter of fact, the FBI said there was no insurrection. The original FBI investigation said it was a spontaneous protest or spontaneous riot, a protest that turned into a riot, and that's it. And then when you look at the rhetoric, while there was violence on January 6, 2021, there was some violence. You know, I've seen the video. Obviously, there's a lot of video that does not show violence. It shows police bringing people very peacefully through the building. They look like they're tour guides carrying people through. So, yeah, there's a lot of video of a lot of peaceful stuff. But there was some violence. Now, the protesters didn't kill anyone. The only person that died as a result of the protest was an Air Force veteran, I forget her name. She got shot in the neck, I think. And that was the only person that died as a result of the riot. She was shot by a Capitol Hill police officer. There was a Capitol police officer that died, but he died later of completely unrelated. It was completely unrelated. The media tried to say that somebody hit him with a fire thing, but that didn't happen. The guy died from completely unrelated. He died of natural causes, completely unrelated to the riot. So the only person who died was a protester, and all of the garbage around this being an insurrection, and in all of that, and Trump somehow shouldn't be on the ballot because of an insurrection. And in Georgia, they're not trying him because of the insurrection. They're trying him because he tried to tell the Republican governor and the Republican attorney general in Georgia to find votes, as the Democrats are phrasing it. I've heard the transcript of the call. You've probably heard the transcript of the call also. It's kind of a gray area where you can interpret it multiple ways. If I wanted to be a prosecutor, what I would say is that Trump was telling them to commit fraud in order to give Trump Georgia. But if I listen to it as a Republican, I'm going to listen to it. And what I hear is Trump telling them, look, guys, we know fraud occurred. We know the evidence is out there. Just roll your sleeves up and look for it. You're going to find it. I'm very, very confident that there was fraud in Georgia. I can give you specifics to look for. Just go out there. We're so close in Georgia. Just go out, look for the fraud, find it, and let's fix this election. Fix this election in that case, not by fixing the election the way Democrats would say he was trying to do, but fix it in terms of make sure it's legitimate because Trump didn't feel that it was. And so you could interpret that either way. It's possible to look at that Trump was telling them to cheat. It's possible to tell them that Trump was telling them just make sure it's legitimate. But the idea that you're going to throw them in prison for this, you know, there's no way somebody can say that they have beyond a reasonable doubt, because the fact that it's very easy to interpret it as him saying that he knows there is fraud, please go out there and find it. You have reasonable doubt. Unquestionably, just from a purely legal perspective, there is no case in Georgia against Trump. But, you know, they're trying him anyway, because what they're hoping for is to get a sympathetic jury, sympathetic judge, and railroad the guy and try to put him in prison and try to prevent him from being the president of the United States. So that's what we're seeing, is an attempt by the bureaucratic state, by the Democrat Party, in conjunction with the bureaucratic state, to say, we will choose your president for you from now on. You don't get a choice. And that is how they are now going to define democracy. A democracy is the bureaucracy gets to choose the leadership and the people can go screw themselves. That is now how they are defining democracy. And we shouldn't be surprised at this. I've been talking about what I call a war on words for years. They've changed the definition of the word racism. They now make it sound like Hitler was a libertarian, so they've changed the definition of the word fascism. Now, you look at Antifa, they're the fascists, but they call themselves anti-fascist. My children told me that I had a view that was, how do they phrase it, adjacent to the alt-right, adjacent to white supremacists and neo-Nazis and whatever. What I actually said is that the Federal Reserve causes recessions when they mismanage monetary policy. And, you know, I don't know, maybe neo-Nazis believe that. Maybe there are bad people who believe that. Well, you know, it happens to be true. So maybe sometimes bad people believe things that are true. The point is that just because some group that is bad may share one particular view on the Federal Reserve with me, that doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me a neo-Nazi. The concept that you have beliefs that are adjacent and you should change your beliefs because they have the beliefs, that's garbage. It's possible for bad people to have some things that they believe that are true. Just, you know, they have some things they believe, obviously, that are horrifically bad, but that doesn't mean everything they believe is false. It's possible to believe in things that are true and to believe in things that are false at the same time. You know, I might believe in things that are false. I obviously don't know that they're false, but it's possible I believe in some things that are false. So, you know, there's this concept of you have adjacent beliefs to a bad group, therefore you're bad, or therefore you should change your beliefs. You know, that came from my children, which tells you just how deep the propaganda goes. But the reason I bring this up and I want to talk about other countries is because this is the kind of thing that happens in other countries that we say they're not really democracies. You look at Putin, got 88% of the vote in Russia. And people are calling that out and saying, well, that wasn't a legitimate election. Well, we're trying to throw the primary guy challenging the president in jail to prevent him from running for office. Who the hell are we to tell the Russians that their election's illegitimate if we can't run a legitimate election ourselves? Not only that, but we've actually flipped the script on it, and we're trying to say that legitimate elections, when I say we, I don't mean me, I don't mean you, I mean the leadership of the country, we're trying to say that a legitimate election is illegitimate because it might choose somebody who's not the right person to be chosen. It's like they're saying that we are going to choose for you the person that you would have voted for if you were worthy of having a vote. And we will allow you to show up on election day and go through the motion, little dog and pony show. Go ahead, throw your little ballot into the machine. Nobody's counting it. We've already picked. We're just going to lie about the whole thing, install the guy that we want. He's dumber than a box of rocks. We can control him, and we're all happy with this. So that's where we're heading, and that may lead us to start looking like, say, Mexico or Poland. I had a conversation about free healthcare, about socialized healthcare, which a lot of people say is free. Obviously, it's not free. It still costs money. You just pay for it through taxes instead of paying for it directly or through insurance the way we do. And I'm not saying our healthcare system is perfect. And I actually hate calling it healthcare. We have a medical care system. Healthcare involves things like diet and exercise. And the American people, unfortunately, are not very good, by and large, at those things. We are a fat public. We are a lazy public. And as a consequence, yeah, our healthcare is not the best in the world. Because we live, in many cases, unhealthy lifestyles. We eat too much fried food. We eat too many grains. We don't eat healthy things. We're not eating enough meat and vegetables. And we're not eating enough fresh foods. We're eating too many processed foods. Yeah, all of that relates to healthcare, but none of that relates to medical care. My wife, you probably heard me say this before, she was born and raised in communist Poland. And in modern Poland, not communist Poland, her father, about 13 years ago, was diagnosed with lung cancer. And his doctor told him, he said, you know, having lung cancer, obviously not a good thing, but you're kind of lucky because you're 69. If you were 70, we would not treat your lung cancer. The only thing available to you would be end-of-life care, which means that they're going to give you pain management. You will die without suffering. But at 70 in Poland, if you get cancer or some other terminal illness, even if it's treatable, they will not treat it because they don't consider your life to be worth saving. They look at the cost of saving you and they think, yeah, we should spend that money on somebody younger than you. You've had your time in the sun. Now it's time to die. We'll make sure you don't suffer and we'll put you down like a dog. That's Poland. And it's not just Poland. Every socialized healthcare system in the world, you know, they say that it's free, but and they say they don't call it free healthcare. They do sometimes. They'll say it's free, which of course is a lie. But the other thing that they'll say that's a lie is that it's universal healthcare. Universal in what way? Was it universal to my father-in-law? Had he been a year older, had he been 70, would it have been universal for him when they told him he couldn't have the care that he needed to survive? That doesn't sound universal to me. If it's truly universal, I should be able to go out to any doctor anytime I want, get whatever health, get whatever medical care I want, and that's it. No questions asked. I want to look like I'm 30 again. I want plastic surgery. No problem. Boom. Universal health care. I should be able to get that. Free right now. Unlimited access. Boom. I should be able to get that. Canadians can't get that. They can't even get a hip transplant. If they want to get a hip transplant, they have to go to the United States. And if you don't believe me, go to Port Huron. Go to Detroit. Go to a healthcare clinic near the border and see how many Canadians are there. Why are Canadians there? Because they can't get to see a doctor in time. They can't get a hip transplant, first of all, in Canada. It's very hard to get. And if they, for example, maybe they're starting to exhibit some symptoms and they think, I should be checked for cancer. Well, great. I can see a doctor in about 6 months to a year. Well, guess what? You don't have that long. By then, it might not be treatable. So they go to America, they see one of our doctors, they pay out of pocket and such and such. But imagine if you didn't have the option to go to America. Imagine if our healthcare system was just like theirs. Well, now, when you're 70 years old, all of a sudden, your life doesn't mean anything anymore. So it's not universal. It's rationed care. It's just rationed by bureaucrats instead of by a price system. In America, we have the best medical treatments in the world. If you have cancer, this is the place to have it. Our survival rates are far better than anybody else's. If you need heart surgery, do you want to have heart surgery in Mexico or the United States? Obviously, you want to have heart surgery in the United States because your chance of surviving it and having a positive outcome are far better here than they are in other countries. Our medical care is the best in the world. Is it too expensive? Yes, it is. The rise of administrators compared to doctors since the 1970s. I saw a chart on this just the other day. The administrative cost has just been exploding, and there is no, that's not changing. It's just getting more and more expensive. And a lot of that's driven by changes, incidentally, that the government made. Medicare, Medicaid, things like that. A lot of the rise in cost has actually been caused by the same bureaucrats who now tell us we're not allowed to choose our leaders. And make no mistake, if we can't choose the president, they're going to start telling us we can't choose the senators, we can't choose the House of Representatives. At some point, you won't be able to choose the water guy. Even local elections at some point are just going to be completely rigged. Because why wouldn't you if you can? You know, when they talk about half the country are deplorables, you know, half of Trump supporters are a bucket of deplorables. If you truly believe that the majority of the American people are a bunch of racist bigots, why the hell would you trust them to choose who the next president of the United States is going to be? If you simply follow the beliefs they tell you they have to their logical conclusion, that tells you they're cheating in elections. And if we become a banana republic that does these kinds of things, that throws Donald Trump in jail, not because he did something wrong, but because you don't want him running for office, that's not going to stop with Donald Trump, my friends. That's going to hit you and me squarely in the face. That's who they're truly going after. All of this talk about they're not going after Trump, Trump's just in the way, there is some truth to that. And I say that not as a Trump supporter. I say that as a Republican who does not support Donald Trump, but is not a never-Trumper either, and is going to vote for Donald Trump over Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, or if they somehow don't run and it's Gavin Newsom or Herr Gretchen Whitmer, whoever they Trump out there, I'm going to vote for Trump. So that's where I am. Back to Mexico, though. The only thing I saw in the resort or in resort areas and where the tourists go, the marina in Cabo San Lucas, what have you, that was an indication that Mexico is a poor country was the Wi-Fi. the Wi-Fi was so bad that I actually got a decent recording of a show. I had recorded my phone because I didn't have a computer with me that I could use. But I got good software on the phone from Microsoft to do the recording. I had a decent headset that I put on. It's kind of nice. I sit at my desk when I do the show usually. I was able to pace around the room. When I talk like that, I kind of like to pace around. So I was able to pace the way I'm more natural doing. And I got a good recording. I couldn't upload it. I didn't know, incidentally, when I uploaded it that the file got frazzled, that it was corrupted. But I could not upload it because the internet speeds were so bad. And that was the case the whole 2 weeks we were there. The internet speeds were ridiculously bad. I actually complained and I said, you know, I would be embarrassed to say I have free Wi-Fi if this is as bad as the Wi-Fi is. But, you know, they have more people trying to access the Wi-Fi than they have Wi-Fi for people to access. And they're putting their money into food and into having pools and hot tubs and all these other things. And you know, other than not having access to the internet or not having competent access to the internet, we had a great time. So I don't have any complaints about the trip. But even in the areas where tourists go and where prices are high and what have you, that was the case. Now, the taxis are not very expensive there, except going to certain locations. And some of those certain locations are places like free public beaches. There are two public beaches for snorkeling in Cabo San Lucas that they're coves, so they're a lot safer to be in than the waters in Cabo San Lucas are usually very, very... A lot of times all the flags are black in most of the places, which means you can't swim. It's illegal to go in the water. And that's because the undercurrents and the riptides, it's very, very dangerous to be in the water. But these two coves are not. One is St. Maria Island, or Santa Maria Island, excuse me. Not my island, my wife calls it island, it's a beach. Santa Maria Beach, that's one of the places. And the other one is, I forget the name of the beach. If I heard it, it's like the name of a country, but it's a beach. But those are two little coves where you can go and you can snorkel, and there's the fish there, very, very colorful fish, hundreds of them. You throw a little bread in the water and just the fish come flocking. So it's great for that kind of an activity. And it's expensive taking a taxi there. So when you go to those places, we always take Uber. And we're using Uber. And I asked the guy, you know, what about the cartels? Is it dangerous being in Mexico with the cartels? I know it's not dangerous in Cabo San Lucas because of the location of it. It's right at the southernmost tip of the Baja Peninsula, so you don't get a lot of cartel activity there. There's not a lot of reason, at least drug-related. You don't the drugs aren't coming up the Baja Peninsula for the most part. Mostly the drugs are coming up the main part of Mexico. They may go through Tijuana, but they're not really coming up the Baja Peninsula, so I don't think there's a lot of drug activity in Cabo San Lucas. But there is cartel activity in Cabo San Lucas, and the guy told me. He said, you have to worry about safety where the cartels are at war with each other. If you have an area, say Cancun, for every once in a while, you'll have a couple of cartels that are battling it out in the Cancun area. And it may be somewhat dangerous for tourists when that's happening, because, of course, you may get caught in the crossfire. But if you're in an area where one cartel is in firm control, other cartels aren't at war with them in that area, he said, look, the cartels, they actually pull all of us Uber drivers together, along with the taxi drivers. They actually tell us, leave the tourists alone. Hurting tourists, killing tourists, stealing from tourists, doing anything to give the tourists a bad time is bad for business. It's bad because it gets the government more aware of our activity and the government becomes more willing to do something about our activity, which at the very least means we have to bribe them with more money, which is, of course, bad for business. It's also bad for business because the cartels are not only making money on moving drugs and things like that, and moving people, and they also have their hands in casinos. They probably have their hands in some of the resorts. They own some legitimate businesses that help them launder their illicit funds. So the cartels in all kinds of things. And as a consequence, they make a lot of money off of tourism. And if you're doing things to make the tourists feel unsafe so there are fewer tourists, that's a problem. Now, I will tell you, there's a lot of security when you go to Mexico. We went to a place for a friend of a timeshare that friends of ours have in Puerto Vallarta years ago, and they actually had people patrolling the compound of the resort with machine guns. And no, that was an eye opener. And but we don't have that in Cabo. But even in Cabo, if you go in a taxi and leave the resort, they take down your name and room number, and they check off and make sure that you come back at night, or they'll start sending out people looking for you. So there is heightened security, and I don't want to say you're as safe there as you are here. If that were the case, they wouldn't need to take your name and room number down when you leave the resort. But we never felt unsafe. What was interesting, though, is no, we don't spend all of our time where the tourists go. We like to go out on excursions, and some of those excursions are a ways away from everything. When we were in Puerto Vallarta, for example, again, years ago, we did this amazing zipline adventure that was way, way out in the jungle, way, way out in the mountains. At times, we're like 600 feet up in the air, going between these giant trees on mountains, and just crazy, crazy ziplining. And we had to drive a long way or be driven a long way to get there. And we like doing adventures when we're in Cabo as well. We parasailing out in the water this time. That was, I got to be honest, what scared the hell out of me. But it was also exhilarating. Something a lot of people maybe don't know. Fear and excitement are really the same emotion. The difference is how you perceive it. If you can flip when you're scared, if you can flip it to excitement, you can often take things that you're not enjoying and make them very enjoyable. So I tried to do that when we were parasailing with mixed success. The truth is I was terrified the whole time we were up there. We had more fun, though. We went out, we did some horseback riding in the desert and on the beach, and we drove a UTV, and it was a fun UTV. It was very fast, and so we had more fun with that. But driving out there, you get to see the living conditions that some of the people in Mexico live under. And calling it third world doesn't really describe it. I think horrific is probably a better word. You know, we're looking at these things, and Gosha's like, people can't possibly actually be living there. Some of these things don't even have windows. They look like shacks. Some of them don't even really, they barely look like buildings. And you know, we're looking at it, and I'm like, well, yeah, I see laundry out. People are living there. I may not be able to see a person right now, but very clearly there's a car parked there, and their laundry is out drying in the sun. And yeah, the people are living there. And I kind of quipped to her, you know, I guess that's what you call affordable housing. But it's not funny. The fact of the matter is that when you go to a poor country, you know, it's poor, and the people there don't have a lot of money. And you see those parts of Mexico. Now, Mexico's a lot richer than I'm sure it was 20, 30, 50 years ago. But Mexico is also a very, very corrupt country where the growth of the economy is stunted by a government that takes from the people and keeps for itself. And, you know, we are increasingly seeing that sort of thing here. I know 20 years ago, I haven't seen numbers about this in a good 20 years, but I know 20 years ago I saw a study, and the study showed that more than half of all of the wealth in the United States lived within 100 miles of our capital. Now, in fairness, I think Washington, D.C. is within 100 miles of New York, so you have a lot of money within 100 miles, even without corruption, but half. That's ridiculous. The reason is because we're taxed excessively at excessive rates. The taxes far more than they need to. And then a lot of that money stays with special interest groups. Also, the laws are written that benefit special interest groups rather than the people. Obamacare. I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember before Obamacare. But before Obamacare, I'd pay about $250 a month for insurance for my family. Have like a $1,000 deductible for my entire family. And have a hard time meeting the deductible because everything was covered. So very few things would get applied toward the deductible. Most years, I wouldn't touch the deductible. You know, if I had to go into the doctor, it was just covered. And so that was very easy. Post-Obamacare, now typical American's going to pay about $800 a month for their health insurance. They're going to have about a $12,000 family deductible. And your insurance isn't paying for a damn thing until you've paid off that deductible. So in my case, I pay about $12,000. If I only meet my individual deductible or one person's deductible, I'm going to pay about $12,000 before my insurance company pays a thing. So I'm giving my insurance company a tremendous amount of money, $800 a month, and I have to pay, on top of that, I have to pay, you know, $5,000 for an individual before the insurance company will pick up anything. So, no, they're making money hand over fist, and we're suffering. We're paying far too much for our insurance. The insurance is covering far too little. And it was just a giveaway to the insurance companies and a giveaway to the pharmaceuticals. And very interesting that we had this giant giveaway to the pharmaceutical companies, and then all of a sudden COVID-19, and we're using the government to give out millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of shots for free. Well, they're not for free. Pfizer's getting paid. And a tremendous amount of corruption. Anthony Fauci was getting paid by that. It turns out that people in the National Institutes of Health had patents in these vaccines and were getting paid. And, you know, that's the kind of corruption you see in other countries, and it's the kind of corruption that you see here, and really bothers me when it hits healthcare. Speaking of healthcare, incidentally, metabolic dysfunction affects 87% of Americans, yet most people have never heard of it. According to the NIH, this is when metabolic health markers like cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, or weight are out of whack. Often there are no symptoms, but left unattended will become inundated with one healthcare problem or another. HealRight is a ready-to-eat metabolic health bar with a synergistic blend of superfood ingredients to address the nutritional root causes of metabolic dysfunction in as little as 8 weeks without additional diet or lifestyle changes. HealRight is not just effective, it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. No more worrying about the side effects of medications and figuring out how to stick to difficult diet and lifestyle changes. It beats metabolic dysfunction. Food can be your best medicine. It tastes like a treat. It acts like a medicine without the side effects. Step out of the statistics using food as medicine. 7 in 8 Americans are metabolically unhealthy. 6 in 10 suffer from at least one chronic disease. 15-plus years of research developed by world-renowned nutritional scientists go into HealRight bars. And 15%, and there's a 100% money-back guarantee. So let's get a metabolic reset. There are measurable results, measurable improvements in just 8 weeks, including in your cholesterol levels, your blood sugar imbalance. You'll have reduced inflammation. You'll see a slimmer waistline, and you'll get gut health and a microbiome health. It lowers GLP-1 naturally as a fraction of the cost of other products. And each bar contains a synergistic blend of superfood ingredients needed to support metabolic health, including 20-plus essential micronutrients, which are vitamins and minerals, soluble and insoluble fiber for close to 25% of total dietary fiber needs in one serving. You get omega-3 fatty acids. You get 6 grams of proteins and other building blocks for metabolic health. You get antioxidants for high-profenol-containing foods. And it's only 250 calories per serving. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a snack. It's not a meal replacement. You still get to eat 3 times a day. So try HealRight today. Go to HealRight.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off of your first purchase. That's code OUTLOUD at HealRight.com, HealRight.com. Personally, I use HealRight to give me some of the metabolism of my youth. I find that after about an hour of eating a HealRight bar, I just feel more mentally focused. I also have been able to remove myself completely from my cholesterol medications. My wife eats a bar a day as well, and she agrees with me. HealRight works. Along with a healthy diet and exercise, HealRight can make all the difference in the world. So, ladies and gentlemen, they have a money-back guarantee. Try it out, see what you think. And we're going to take a pause now for HealRight and for our other advertisers, and I will see you on the other side. Stay tuned. We have much more to talk about.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill, it's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX. Because it works.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Be a part of a revolutionary new healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interests of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Spike proteins help viruses enter into your cells, disrupting your health and your well-being. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body of spike proteins, which allows your body to repair from within, supporting your immune and respiratory systems and regulating your inflammatory response. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutLoud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Cutting Through the Chaos on the America Out Loud Network. I'm Wallace Garneau, your host. We've got a lot more to talk about, so let's go right back into it. When we talk about other countries, things that are going on there. Now, I've been to a lot of other countries. My wife being from Europe, I was stationed in Germany for 3 years. Had a really interesting story from when I was in Germany. My wife at the time was pregnant while we were there, and she was having panic attacks. So we went to the emergency room, and they wanted to do this test on her. She had to drink something. I don't remember all the details. But I asked them, you know, she's pregnant. Is this safe for the baby? And they said, well, of course it's safe for the baby. Go ahead and do it. Well, it didn't sound right, so we didn't do it. And we went to the military hospital in Würzburg the next day, and they told us, oh, yeah, we know what that test is. That would have killed the baby. So, you know, thank God that didn't happen. My daughter now is 26 years old. She's in her first year teaching high school at she's an English teacher now at a high school, and very proud of her. She bought her first house recently, and now she's my daughter. I love her, and I would not have her had we simply done what a medical doctor in Germany told us to do. Now, I'm not going to say that one example is the case of everybody who sees the doctor in Germany. I'm sure when people go to doctors in Germany, in many cases, they have very positive outcomes. But I know for a fact that you are much more apt to come out with a positive outcome for medical care in the United States than you are in Germany. In England, England is really in dire straits. You know, they've got women are having babies in hallways because they don't have enough room for them in. They just don't have enough beds, and you can't stop. You can tell somebody in the emergency room who's in there because he's you know having headaches or something. You're going to have to wait 12 hours or 24 hours. Baby's going to come and baby's going to come. So that's a problem. We're lied to a lot about the healthcare in other countries. Now we're told it's free, it's universal. We're not really told the negative sides of having bureaucrats do the rationing rather than having pricing do the rationing. And there are a lot of things we could do to lower the cost of healthcare in the United States, such as by reducing regulations, reducing the red tape, and getting rid of all the administrators. There's a lot of things we could do. I don't want to get into a big discussion on how to fix healthcare. That would be at least one story unto itself. Point is, if we go to a free or a universal or a socialized, is the correct way to put it, a socialized medical care system, we're going to see quality suffer. There are three things related to healthcare, or really anything, that they call it the unholy trinity. You could focus on any two of these directions, but you can't focus on all three at the same time or the wheels come off the bus. Those are affordability, quality, and universality. If you try to make it universal, the cost is going to explode. And in order to control costs, you can bring down quality. There are you can try to move two of those up, but always at the expense of the third. And what we tried to do with Obamacare is we tried to make our health care, our medical care, universal without sacrificing quality. And what has happened is that the cost has exploded. And that was a very foreseeable outcome. Obama was okay with that outcome because he thought, well, if I destroy our medical care system, I make it prohibitively expensive, people will be more open to allowing us to socialize it. In which case, we can start saying when you're 70 years old, you can die. We're not going to treat you anymore like they do in so many other countries. So that's just the way that is. And that's not just true about medical care. That's true about everything. You know, if I said everybody could have a brand new car every 3 years and they could choose whatever car they want, everybody's going to go out and get a Maserati or a Ferrari or a Rolls Royce or something very, very expensive. And we all know intuitively that the cost of cars, if we did that, it would be prohibitively expensive. Our taxes would go through the roof. Somehow, people think when we apply it to healthcare, the same thing is not true. Ladies and gentlemen, of course it's true. In order to control costs, they have to reduce quality. They have to reduce access. It becomes bureaucratic controlled. It becomes difficult to see a doctor. You pay through wait lines or wait times instead of paying through your pocketbook. And all too often, what happens is instead of having to face the possibility of going bankrupt, you have to face the possibility of going dead. So, you know, take somebody who's got cancer that needs to see a doctor today and ask them, tell them you've got two choices. You can either be cured of cancer and live another 30 years, but it's going to cost you. You're going to have to go through bankruptcy. Or you can die and you'll die for free. See what they choose, because that really is what the choice is. And then we get lied to about, for example, the Scandinavian countries. Everybody says, well, here's an example of socialism. We can look at socialism in the Scandinavian countries. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been all over Europe. Very, very familiar with the Scandinavian countries, and I can tell you that we're being lied to about what is happening in the Scandinavian countries. Did they play with socialism? Yes, they did. They became incredibly wealthy, as are we. They became very wealthy through laissez-faire capitalism, very, very lax regulation, became very, very wealthy, and then they began to play with socialism in the 1970s and 1980s. And they went all in. They really did. They went all in. And their economies began to crash such that in the 90s, they began privatizing again. How privatized are they? In Sweden, their K-12 schooling is privatized. You get a voucher and you decide how to spend the voucher. You can spend more than the voucher if you want, but you can find plenty of schools just with the voucher. So the government's paying for the schools, but you go to whatever school you want to, teaches your kids whatever you want them to be taught. They privatize their social security system. And Chile's social security system, the one I know the most about, that is privatized, it pays, the return on investment is 5 times what ours is. And so when people tell me, well, so you would want to screw around with Social Security and hurt our elderly, my response is no. I want to give our elderly more money. We are hurting our elderly by giving them 1/5 what they should get if we had simply taken their money and put into a privatized system. They would, on average, get 5 times as much. And then somebody says, well, what do you do for the people that don't do very well in a privatized system? Well, tax those that do really well to give a minimal subsistence level to those that don't. Give them what Social Security today would give them. And, you know, there are solutions to these things. Some of them are very difficult, but they're out there. But, you know, we're lied to about what's happening in all of these countries. And you know, the Scandinavian countries are not really socialist. They are free market countries that have very, very generous welfare states. And those generous welfare states are catching up with them. You know, everybody is named Sven. There's a correlation between the amount of cultural diversity in a country and how quickly a generous welfare state will destroy the incentive to work. The less diverse a country, the longer it can carry a generous welfare state before the willingness to work begins to deteriorate. And the countries that are doing, that have done the best historically with strong welfare systems, that have yet to get rid of those after moving away from socialism for 20, 30 years, are the Scandinavian countries where everybody is named Sven. You know, they're the least culturally diverse places in the world. And as they bring in migrants, we're starting to see that, welfare is becoming more expensive. More people are being supported by the state every year. And it's not just the migrants. They've been paying people long enough now that younger people in those countries are beginning to question whether or not it makes sense for them to go to work. Why not just stay home and play Xbox all day and let somebody else support you? And, you know, that becomes a good question. My sister-in-law works in London, and she actually has friends that laugh at her and say, why are you working? You're not making any more money than we are. We're staying home. We get paid to go on vacation. We're staying home. You're working and you know, busting your butt to try to support yourself, and all they're doing is taxing you. When you look at what you have after taxes compared to what we get through the generous welfare state, you're not making any more than us. So why are you killing yourself with a job when you can do whatever you want and the government will support you? Well, yes, that has an impact on people's willingness to work. And I forget who came up with the analogy, but if you think of it like a welfare state, like pulling a wagon, when the vast majority of the public are pulling the wagon and only a few people are riding in the wagon, the wagon's not very heavy. It doesn't slow down progress very much. But as you move more and more people into the wagon and have fewer and fewer people pulling it, that wagon starts getting pretty heavy, and it becomes hard to pull. Eventually what happens is you don't have enough people pulling the wagon to keep it moving forward at all, and the people in the wagon, they don't blame themselves. They blame the people that are still out pulling the wagon, which is why in our country we're starting to see attacks on success. Now, what's happening is, the World Economic Forum has decided that the Western world needs to reduce its standard of living by 90%. That's on average in the Western world. As the richest country in the Western world, the United States is still the richest country in the Western world, we have to reduce our standard of living by something more than 90%. How much? I don't know exactly. I'm going to say probably about 95%. What that means is that the World Economic Forum wants our standard of living to be 5% of what it is today. So, for example, whatever it is that you have to live on after you pay all of your taxes, give 95% of that to the government in addition to everything else you're giving to them. That's what they want you to survive on. And I'm not saying that everybody in our country, that the Democrats in our country all want you to be that poor, but the movement is toward less wealth for the American people. The idea here is that we are going to inflate away our wealth. We're going to inflate away the value of the dollar. We're going to make everything more expensive except labor, so that everything you buy is going to cost more and your wages are not going to go up. And we're simply going to inflate our way into a lower standard of living. Now, inflation works exactly like a tax. So in essence, what they're doing is they're radically raising our taxes, and we're going to pay through inflation. I think personally we're going to see a period of deflation because I think we're going to go into a significant recession. But at the when the recession ends, I think we're because of our economic policy, because of all the money we're spending, the deficit money we're spending, I see inflationary pressures from now to the end of time. I don't see this is probably like a 40-year cycle. We're going to see high rates of inflation, in my opinion. This is not investment advice, but in my opinion, I think we're going to see high rates of inflation after a brief deflationary period for a very, very long time. And our government seems to want to do everything that it can to prevent our wages from going up so that they can use this high rate, this period of high inflation to make us poor. We're being turned into a third world country, I guess is what I'm saying. And at the same time that they are trying to deflate our wages relative to the cost of everything else, our real earnings, which have been going down since Biden became president, they're bringing millions of people across our border that can compete for our jobs. Joe Biden doesn't even call them illegal immigrants. He actually had to apologize to a murderer for calling him an illegal alien. As crazy as that sounds, it actually happened. No, he calls them, he called them something that was very welcoming to them. And we're going entirely the wrong direction there. But again, you know, what the World Economic Forum wants is to have people free to migrate to all of the rich countries that they can then make poor. And they want to turn us into, you know, the World Economic Forum is on record as saying that the world should only have about 500 million people on it. So, you know, that's about 90% of the world population's got to go, according to that. That's what they're heading toward. And And you and I are if you're listening to this, you're a conservative, and you're probably going to be considered on the 90% that need to go list. So, you know, we're going to some very, very difficult times, and we're being lied to. And I've been to Albania. I was in Albania, Peaceful Eagle 95, when I was still in the Army. We were the first Americans to go into Albania, at least the first military unit to go into Albania since before World War I. And the Albanians, to tell you how poor this country was at the time, they were the only European country to follow the Chinese model of communism instead of the Soviet model of communism. And we went to a barracks there. And they had a gun range. We wanted to show them how to fire a rifles properly. We were there to train them in peacekeeping operations because this was during the Serbian-Bosnian War. And there was no berm or anything to fire into. There was a barracks lining one side of the rifle range, and there was a farm across the street. And we said, "This isn't safe. We can't teach you to shoot here." And they said, "Well, it's okay. We'll put out ground guides to block the road when we're shooting." We said, "What about the farm on the other side?" "Oh, we'll tell him not to farm that day. He'll just stay inside." We're like, "No, this is not safe. We're not shooting here." So they had to drive us way out into the mountains, and took a long time to get there because there were areas they wanted to drive around. They did not want us to see just how poor the country was. You saw some pretty poor stuff anyway. I saw kids sleeping in dumpsters, for example, on top of garbage because it was more, I guess it was more soft than sleeping on the ground. So I saw some horrific things there. What was interesting, though, is we went to a range that was safe out in the mountains. You had to walk through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of yards of all these military trucks, just thousands and thousands of these military trucks. And we're going there for like a week every day to take these people out there and let them shoot the M16. And I kept asking myself, what's wrong with all these trucks? What is it about all these trucks that makes them unserviceable? And it finally dawned on me that every single one of them had worn tires. So this country was so poor that even getting all the military aid from China, China would give them trucks. And when the tires and the trucks were worn, they couldn't afford to replace the tires. So they would park the trucks at a graveyard like this. And then when they got new trucks from China, if those new trucks broke down, they would use these thousands and thousands and thousands of trucks with worn tires for replacement parts. Now, these are the things poor countries do. I've been to third world countries. I have seen how poor people live. And so when I see the changes occurring in this country, politically, economically, everything else, ladies and gentlemen, I know where this is heading. I know what they're trying to do to us. They're trying to turn us into a poor country. They're trying to destroy the wealth of the United States. They're lying to us about everything. And they say they want to save democracy. Well, they want to save democracy by telling us we're not allowed to vote for the candidate of our choice. That's not saving democracy. That's ending democracy. You know, COVID-19, we know it was created in a lab at this point. We know that the vaccines were ineffective. They're lying to us about everything. And you know, we're just expected to sit back and take it. It's as if they don't think we have any other choice. And they're trying to take away any other choice. They're saying that Donald Trump should not be able to be president because he led an insurrection, that he neither led nor was it an insurrection. His actual words were peacefully and patriotically protest. Well, peaceful, patriotic, that's what it's supposed to be. They tell us that it was an insurrection. It was this incredibly violent event. When we see all of the video, it was far more peaceful than any of the left-wing riots that took place the several years before that, while Donald Trump was president. And after George Floyd, the whole country just exploded into all kinds of violence. They're saying mostly peaceful, and they couldn't even find a camera angle. There wasn't a building on fire in the background. I mean, the idea that those were mostly peaceful and what happened on January 6, 2021 was not mostly peaceful. Just look at the evidence, and you can see what's going on. So this is a very, very, very dangerous place. I saw an article on CNN today. I saw two interesting articles. I probably only have time to bring up one, but I saw an interesting article on CNN where what they wanted to say is, don't fear. Right now, Donald Trump is winning in every battleground state. He is winning in every poll, but within the margin of error. As long as we can keep him in the margin of error, there's always a good chance that Joe Biden will outperform on election night and he'll win even though he's losing in all the polls. Of course, that can happen legitimately, but it can also happen illegitimately. And since we know that everything we're not allowed to say is what is true. Well, if you say that the last election was rigged, you're not allowed to say that. And we know from experience since the age of COVID that when you're not allowed to say something, that usually means that it's true. So did Joe Biden legitimately get 81 million votes? I don't know. I'm kind of questioning that myself. I'm going to say I don't think he did. But the point is, when Democrats say they don't trust the American people to make choices, we should not then believe that they allow us to make choices if they can choose to do otherwise. I think the 2020 election was rigged, and I think the 2024 election is going to be rigged as well. I don't think Democrats still want to share power. I think we are now witnessing the emergence of a one-party state. It is an anti-American party. It is against the American way of life. It is against the American people. It is against our wealth. It is against our freedom. It is against our liberty. It is against everything this country has ever done or stood for. And if we can't vote our way out of it, then we're going to have to find some other means to save the country, or we're going to start looking like Mexico and not where the resorts are. It's not going to look like Cabo San Lucas. It's going to look like the areas that I had to drive through to get to the exciting events that we wanted to go on, the excursions. And that scares me, ladies and gentlemen. It ought to scare you as well. And just like that, ladies and gentlemen, we are running out of time, but that's okay. We got through everything I wanted to cover. We talked about, you know, overseas. I brought in the election, talked about what third world countries look like. We talked about things that are happening in third world countries. And what we can see here, we talked about, they're turning us into one, and they're doing it right in front of our noses. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're not upset about that, you should be. And we should all be very, very concerned. Do vote. I'm not going to tell you that because the election is probably going to have some shenanigans, you shouldn't get out there and vote. Vote early and vote often, as the old saying goes. But as always, thank you for tuning in. Please tell others who might be interested in Cutting Through the Chaos to listen in either on Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. on the radio station or on podcast whenever they have time. It usually drops to podcast sometime right around Monday. And we will see you next week at the same time and place, where it will once again be time to get involved and to get loud on America Out Loud. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, and we will see you next week.